Hello? 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 So we're still losing, you know, hello?
We do have him on the phone.
Yes, we do. We are in program. We have everything. Hello? Hello? We've got it now. We'll get him on.
That's
here.
The one.
We're going to get Matthew Good. There's the sign that we don't know what we're doing right there. But we're gonna actually get him back online here just momentarily. So we're going to go into a little bit of something else for a moment. We apologize for technical difficulties, but this is a new thing. But I think I figured it out. Hello.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So we are... There's Sonny as well.
Yay.
Yeah, yay. So we are live on air with Matthew Good. May I call you Matt?
Sure.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And we've kind of did a little preview of how we've come to this end of a path, if you will. Sonny has clued us in as to how you guys got hooked up with Thought Mechanics and your web blog as well. So my first actual question for you that I kind of wanted to get out there, my show is all about music, and you know, what is one of the songs that you wrote that you hate the most?
Oh, Christ, man, that's a laundry list. Oh, well, it really depends, right? I mean, after 10 years, I mean, it's, you know, I have, I don't know, let's see, I guess 21, like, top 10 singles, or I've had that in my career.
It was 21. I was checking that out.
Something like that. So, like, when you play a show, for example, three or four of them being the biggest, you have to play them over and over and over and repeatedly, and that can, you know, get on your nerves after a while. But I've been fortunate in that even the ones that, you know, included in that list that I don't like, I just stopped playing altogether about five years ago.
Yep, that makes.
I just said, you know what, I don't like that song, so I'm not going
to
play it.
Right, and you have a great list of tunes to play rather than the ones you just don't dig anymore.
Well, the tour I just did in the fall, it's very difficult, right? Because you go out and you tour and you're looking at a pool of 70 or 80 songs, and you've got to refine that into, you know, an hour and 45 minute show, which, you know, becomes extremely difficult to do.
Right.
You know, what do you choose? What do you not choose? I mean, you want to play certain singles and make sure that basis is covered, but you also want to, you know, play some of your favorite songs. I've always been a far greater proponent of playing shows where a lot of album tracks are played, because I think that's why, you know, a lot of the people who repeatedly come and supported me over the last decade come to shows to hear things like that, not to hear Hello Time Bomb for the, you know, 50th time.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, I've been actually, something that's been in my system recently since Sonny and I have been discussing. See, it was an odd thing how about a week and a half before Sonny got his first, you know, you guys were emailing back a little bit and communicating, I had done an interview with Ravi Shankar. And for me, that was like, you know, the Dalai Lama, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to meet him backstage after a show. You know, I was the only person that they let in there. And, you know, I'm not quite sure I've washed all the fingers on that hand yet. you know, then a week later, here's Sonny's coming into my office saying, oh my God, had this fantastic story. It's, you know, it's, The contacts that we're fortunate enough to make through what we do is just fantastic.
Well, it happens to everybody too, right? I mean, early on in my career in 1996, I got to play with my rock and roll heroes for two nights. Like I played with The Who.
Oh my gosh!
And you know, meeting Roger and Pete Townsend, and I mean, you know, it was just for me I was beside myself. Not only that too, I spent most of after the first show talking with Gil Norton.
Wow.
Who, of course, produced all the Pixies records
and
numerous other albums. He was going to work with me, but unfortunately we had a scheduling conflict, and it didn't work out. But lovely guy. And, you know, so it's been things like that happen, and I think that it's very strange, you know, things like that just work out the way they work out. So.
Yeah, very serendipitous.
Yeah, absolutely.
And fortunate. I must have told Ravi Shankar I was blessed that, you know, here I am able to do this interview with him 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the truth. You know, inspiration.
You know, it's interesting how things like that happen. I mean, the time when that happened to me in 96, I was an independent artist. I wasn't even on a record label, and I, My manager at the time was a fantastic guy that I'm still in touch with, but was a throwback to kind of, you know, the 60s Canadian rock.
Right.
You know, and worked with everyone from... Actually, he tour managed Muddy Waters for years and worked with, like, you know, the Guess Who and, you know, bands of that ilk. And, you know, so when they came to town, it was... He could pull strings, and he knew, you know, some of the people in that organization. So he got us that opportunity, and so that, you know, which made it a bigger deal.
Yeah, you got to make the most of those things.
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. They don't
especially
come around
in your hometown. You can never go wrong.
Never can go wrong. No, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So some of your inspirations, The Who, and that must have been big. Anybody else out there that you would have liked to have gotten a chance to play with?
Well, I mean, yeah, I would have loved to have got the chance to work with Mark Hollis, who is the lead singer for a band called Talk Talk, and is actually married to my cousin Felicity.
Nice.
I found out in the late 90s. I didn't know. She's like my fourth or fifth cousin, though, but, it, you know, it's still,
okay.
That's still a weird
family
revelation. Yep. When you grow up, you know, admiring that band. And I would say they're probably all around my favorite group. I mean, I think the last two records that they made, Laughingstock and Spirit of Eden, hold up as maybe two of the best records of the latter half of the 20th century, in my opinion. You know, a lot of other acts went on, especially after, you know, in the 90s and in the early part of this century, and based a lot of the elements in their work on that. And those records weren't very popular, you know. But if you ever find someone who's actually spent a lot of time listening to something like Laughingstock, that, you know, they just won't shut up about it, nor do I. But it's,
I just actually bought it off Matt's recommendation the other night, and they don't have the whole album on iTunes, but I got the songs that I could, and it's really good.
Yeah, it's like near perfection as far as, but you know, it's not in a pop sense, you know,
right,
and not in a throw your fist in the air sense. Mm-hmm. It's very jazz influenced,
right?
But it's just the essence of it. It's very rare to find that in music, and Spirit of Eden as well. There's just an essence to it that is entirely original. And if you look at bands, you know, the later work of bands like Radiohead.
Oh, I love Radiohead.
And
yeah,
the Beta Band and things like that. When you examine what they've done, I mean, I think I believe Tom York even mentioned Spirit or Laughingstock before as having influenced them. But I mean, you can trace those influences in those bands directly back to that record.
Yeah, you definitely can.
They're rooted there.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, what makes those records entirely special is they're all actually performed. From, you know, there's not drum machines used.
Yeah.
Lee Harris played the drums, and they did things sonically that were very bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, there's a on Laughingstock, there's a song called New Grass, which is probably my favorite song of all time, and I think you can hear the kick drum twice in the entire thing. I know that Mark made a record that was championed, or it was the record of the year it came out, and it would have been in the late 90s, I guess. The London Times called it the best record of the year, and Warren Livesey, who produced a whole bunch of my records, co-wrote some of it with him and produced, and then finally couldn't work with him anymore because Mark is extremely anal and meticulous and plodding and very difficult to work with. But the entire record was just recorded around one microphone ensemble in the middle of a room, and then he would move instruments closer and further away from it. And the whole thing was done like that.
Wow. Now,
and,
very,
you know,
innovative.
Yeah, things like that. It's just people, you know, unfortunately, you have to have a successful career behind you and have millions of pounds to sink into something like that and expect it not to sell.
Yeah.
Be able to actually do it. Unfortunately, these days, you're not going to have bands stepping out, you know, or trying things that crazy. I mean, they do, you know, a lot of indie bands do, but it's very difficult for them to get mass exposure. I mean, and there are a lot of other factors that go along with that. I mean, when the largest retailer in your country, for example, you know, can foist its morality, you know, on the entertainment business and say, well, you can or can't sell this at our chain, and we're the, you know, we represent, you know, a percentage of the gross national product. You know, it's very difficult for entertainment companies, being that they're in business and they have, you know, shareholders to placate,
sure.
For them not to go, well, you know what, we're going to pull this song or this song off a record. And, you know, I mean, when the only record I've ever released in the United States was Beautiful Midnight, and when it came out, in 2000 down there, I mean, I had to do a whole Walmart version of it,
mm-hmm.
where they took out vocals.
You had to pop it up a little.
Well, I didn't have to pop it up at all.
Give them what they want.
I had to actually lose like song titles.
Yeah, didn't they actually remaster it too?
I don't know that they remastered it. I know that Atlantic had some songs remixed just for American radio. But I mean, songs like "Born to Kill" or "Born is Machine Gun," they had to remove the titles. They had to put blanks in there and stuff.
Wow!
And it was kind of like I couldn't believe it. I mean, because obviously, in Canada, it didn't even have an explicit lyrics warning on it.
Right. That's like cutting off the finger of the artist here.
Well, it's just kind of ridiculous, but unfortunately, because they are, and plus they're the largest music retailer in the country, it's Universal or Atlantic's not going to fight that, because then they lose the ability to work with them with acts like Rihanna or whoever the hell else.
Well,
right?
Yeah, they'll lose all the big money acts down the road.
You don't want to piss anybody off.
No, certainly not.
Unfortunately, That permeates the music business from the top down, and you have to remember that the corporate infrastructure in the entertainment business is not really all that different. You have a whole bunch of guys who are making three figures, who have stock options, and spend Christmas in St. Bart's, who don't want to lose what they have, so it's easier to lay off people or reduce the salaries of employees.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And it works. That's uniform, pretty much throughout. A lot of corporate infrastructures, which would be why on our continent, employers and owners make hundreds of times more than employees do. While in Europe, the disparity is much less.
Yeah. Yep. That I've been definitely listening to a lot of audio of Being.
Yeah,
I've been totally digging on Fall of Man. For some reason, has just been something I can't get away from.
Mm-hmm.
And what was I don't want to say inspiration or what to you? What's behind that song or what what streams led you to that river?
Oh, that record for me is an absolute. It's eternally shrouded in mm-hmm. a mist. Let's put it that way.
Really, yeah.
The band was breaking up during the making of that record.
No one was talking
to one another.
Oh,
it was people would lay down parts to go over other people's parts on purpose. I'd walk in, and Dave Genn, who was the guitar player or the lead guitar player in the band, had done something ridiculous and silly. And then I'd have to sit there and go, "No, that we've got to redo that, or we've got to take that off, or." That doesn't work, there was a lot of opportunism going on as far as people trying to get writing credit, because you get paid on that for publishing, and it was just a disaster. That record was an absolute disaster. 90% of it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to.
That's a shame.
It's a total shame. And I spent 4 months making that record, and I probably threw up every day from the stress of it all.
Jeez.
I spent most of the time in the bathroom puking. So it wasn't a fun situation.
No.
And as far as that song's concerned, I'm not, to be quite honest with you, I can't really remember. I remember that I lived up in Whistler, which is a ski town, it's kind of a small village up about 2 hours north of Vancouver, and where I don't go in the winter at all because it's just tourist hell up there. But in the summer, it's quite nice because it's empty. And it's beautiful and hot up there, and you can go hiking up in the hills, and there's lakes and stuff. But I went up there for like 3 weeks and lived up there and wrote that record, and the majority of it anyway in that three-week period. And it was just a really bizarre time. So, I think I've blanked it.
Yeah, it's good. It's interesting for me to find out, little tidbits and stories like that about an album or track. Now, since I have Sonny sitting right over here, I know he's itching to talk a little bit about the blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been spending some time on your blog and, of course, Sonny's. And actually, I clicked onto your wife's blog the other day as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of great thoughts floating around out there in the world. My God. And they're all like Sonny's involved in a lot of them, I've noticed. So,
just in spirit.
I think Sonny wants to talk a little bit about the blog. So, Sonny, I'm going to let you ask a couple of things here. What do you want to talk about, Sonny? You're so quiet, which is a rarity.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, especially since you work with me, and I'm totally the opposite there.
Yeah.
No, I'm just letting you guys groove. Well,
don't make any lemon party comments, goddammit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, lemonparty.org, great website for you folks. No,
we can only say that because it's college radio, too.
That's right.
You know that everybody...
which is great, because here I can play anything I want just about at any time.
Exactly.
You know, I love that. That's why I love this. People often, you're going to go, try to make some money doing this. No, sell my soul.
The only time I've ever done a college radio interview in that part of the world is at Brown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in, like, I guess 2000.
Wow, I'm in good company then.
You know, so it was great school too. So
I was just gonna ask Matt. I mean, I kind of already know the answer to this because I've been talking to him like every day for the past
But our faithful listeners don't.
Yes. So Matt, how do you? You spend a lot of your time blogging.
Mm-hmm.
How would you compare your experience blogging to, say, your musical interests these days?
Good question, Sonny.
Oh, well, Christ, man. I spend probably far more time doing computer-oriented stuff these days than I do playing or writing music, that's for sure. But then again, I also just had a Greatest Hits come out, right? So
yep.
I'm somewhat tanked on the whole music experience in some ways. You can only suffer fools, at a record company for so bloody long until,
mm-hmm.
You feel like moving to the South Pacific. I don't know. I mean, I started writing on the internet in the 90s. Back then I didn't know what I was doing. I knew how to save what I had written to a disc, and then I would give that disc to someone who worked with my management, they had somebody there that can upload it onto the band's website. So I did it every month. And I had an email address where people could email me questions, and then I would sarcastically respond after whatever bit of short fiction I had written for that month. And it became quite popular. It lasted for 3.5 years, and it was turned into a book eventually. But, I started doing that, and it wasn't really until, I guess, 2000 that I really kind of started to get into the kind of citizen journalism aspect, if you want to call it that. Of it, and then the rise of the web blog kind of happened around 2000-2001 in a lot of ways, and like everybody else, I started probably with a live journal blog, and then that was ridiculous, and then got a blog, a blogger blog, and from there to WordPress, and somewhere in there I just fell in love with designing them.
All right, that seems to be your new hobby these days.
Pretty much, that's what I do. I sit around and I fool around with Photoshop.
As I mentioned earlier, Matt designed the new version of Thought Mechanics.
I did. There are changes I want to make, though. I was going to tell you that yesterday.
The ever-changing Thought Mechanics?
The ever-changing. I think it could look better. That's all I'm going to say. I think now I look back on that design, we were excited over the functionality of it. I have to say that I think it could look better.
So
I think it's kind of boring.
They can always look better.
We're talking about Sonny's weblog, thoughtmechanics.com. And now, Matt, what's your weblog again?
Just MatthewGood.org.
MatthewGood.org. So folks,
or .net.
One of the two. So folks, feel free to check those out and blog along. Get in the blog community. Share your ideas and thoughts.
Oh, and there's plenty.
And there are plenty out there.
I remember Matt was telling me a story. It's funny how people can be fickle, most of the people, in fact, everyone that I've seen on Matt's blog, they're just great. They're really intelligent people. They know a lot about the world that they live in, and talk about a lot of the important issues of the day. But Matt was telling me, I think he wrote a post about it actually. Sometimes he gets people that just write to him and ask him for an autograph or send me a signed picture or something like that. And I'm sure he gets a lot of those.
Sure.
And so I think he might have just
that's kind of lame, though.
He might have just let that one slip by. He might have forgot about that one email.
Jeez.
And I think what was it, Matt? She wrote you an email saying, "Oh, by the way, you suck."
Oh yeah, it was like a guy, right? I mean, he wrote me this huge, long, disparaging email, using every profanity in the book, and calling me you don't fucking care about your fans and yada yada yada, the usual thing when you didn't get back to him right away, the fact that you get several hundred emails a day.
Just want to mention, Matt, that the bleep button is broken here, so Careful.
Oh, I'm not allowed to swear. It's college radio, man.
Only between midnight and 6 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened to your country?
Yeah, exactly.
We're wondering
well,
that stuff.
I can put my finger on it. It happened about, what, 5 years ago or so?
Yes, exactly.
So before,
we'll get into that in a minute.
No, actually...
it happens. I've had things in the... Like, you know, I have probably about 2,500 to 2,700 registered members on my blog. You have to register to comment. In the past, I've got death threats from people. People have threatened to rape my wife.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. I mean, you know, quite serious things that have actually gone to the police with. And I've had problems in the past with a stalker or a couple of different people that were kind of violently predisposed. So, you know, it's the things, you know, when you live in the public eye, it's things you have to deal with.
Yeah, he lets me stalk him.
Yet Sonny stalks you, and it's okay.
Yet Sonny stalks me, and it's okay.
Yeah, see, that's good.
But, you know, I mean, it really kind of depends. There's a fine line, I believe, between what you're willing to accept and the fact that you're not willing to accept people's complete abandonment of civility just because they can. And I think that's a very telling thing. I think that when people can just, because they're in a realm where anonymity rules, that they can just abandon all civility, says something very real, you know, sociologically, about, you know, the limitations that people have to deal with in their daily lives about expressing themselves. You know, the confinement that they have to deal with, that they get into this fourth dimension, if you will. And, you know, they cut loose and you have 50-year-old men acting like 5-year-olds. I remember it quite well. This man named Rick Moran came to my, pinged my blog or tracked back my blog and left this comment that was just, like, I thought a 15-year-old had written it, literally. It was that immature. You know, very right-wing conservative, and that's, you know, I mean, obviously there are plenty of right-wing conservatives that can be very eloquent, you know, and mature in their statements, but I thought a 15-year-old kid had done this, so I deleted it, because it was just garbage, and it was just, you know, it was looking basically just to inflame and nothing more, and I've had that, my fill of that over the last 7 years, so.
As many comments do.
Yeah, as many comments do, and so I thought, just for shits and giggles, I'll look up his email or his web address. Well, I go there. This guy's like in his 50s. His brother's the ABC White House correspondent.
Oh, jeez.
I mean,
Louise.
I could not believe it.
Wow.
And that, to me, encapsulates the entire thing. You know, I mean, whether you go, it's just, one thing about the blog sphere that's very dangerous is people kind of running on with half thoughts and convolution. There's a lot of ambiguities out there, and that is really dangerous as well. I think that it's the most revolutionary tool in the world as far as free access to information is concerned, but you have to be willing to put the time in to sift through that information, right? And that doesn't happen, and as Sonny will attest to, in a lot of, you know, on the internet very much.
It happens about 5% of the time.
Yeah,
yeah. That's...
Both people just kind of look at what they're interested in looking at, and, you know, and that's about it. I mean, recently I decided over the last couple of weeks I would start reading a couple, you know, popular conservative American blogs. Michelle Malkin, who, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I don't know how this woman has a job. It's kind of the same. She's, you know, she's trying to be Ann Coulter, I guess, which was fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean,
because we need another one of them.
Well, because we need. I love it when she visits our country. I think it's fantastic. Last time she talked to the CBC, she made her say, I mean, this is a woman who is a New York Times best-selling author. She's talking to the CBC, and she's talking about how Canada has supported every military action the United States has been involved in, and, you know, and rightly so. The CBC journalist said, well, no, we opposed the Vietnam War and actually harbored a whole bunch of, a whole bunch of Americans that refused to fight. And she actually sat there and she goes, no, I think you're wrong about that. Like, she actually did not even know that. Like, what idiot goes into an interview
uninformed
and talks about something of that nature and doesn't even know what they're talking about, yet is a New York Times best-selling author in the realm of politics?
Yeah.
That is a scary, scary thing, you know. And it's and so Michelle Malkin is very much of that mind. It's all, you know, it's all slithering your way through things. And I'm not going to sit here and say that just because she happens to be, you know, on the right side of the American political spectrum, that's my basis for, you know, the basis of my analysis is somehow skewed. I don't particularly like daily costs either. I think there's a lot of convolution that goes on over there as well.
Well, the bigger the blogs get, the more people that get on there.
The half-minded get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, it's like the worst, probably the greatest of all echo chambers on the internet has to be Little Green Footballs. You know, it's, you know, never mind I wouldn't even say thinly veiled racism. It's overtly racist.
Overtly, yeah. Wow.
And no one can, of course, comment on the blog because registration is completely closed. So you have several hundred or, you know, people who are members, obviously, of this thing who just basically sit there and propagate this just hate rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. But you can register on MatthewGood.org.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, sure, go nuts.
And so hit up that blog as well as Sonny's at ThoughtMechanics.com. I hate to cut you off during the middle of all of this, but we're only allowed a half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these. I know they're inhibiting me with rules, but I got to attest to some of them so I can continue to do so. Now, gosh, I really want to thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
And it was wonderful to actually speak to somebody with a brain. You know.
Hey,
and you too, Sonny. Sonny.
Did that make any sense?
Sonny, you too.
You just keep Sonny around for his sweet ass.
That is absolutely positively it. But I want to thank you again, and look forward to perhaps chatting with you again down the road. And
absolutely.
And, you know, have a great New Year's. Actually, anything for your New Year's?
My wife and I do the same thing every year. About two blocks from our house, there's a French restaurant, which is owned by a man who was the chef of the King of Belgium and then was part of the Canadian culinary team. He's from Burgundy in France, mm-hmm. and it's an outstanding place. I only spend money on two things, food and computers,
yep,
really. And so we go there every year and for dinner, and that's pretty much it. I kind of got all the, you know, reckless partying out of my way, in my 20s, and it's...
Yeah, I know that.
I just get too tired now, man.
Absolutely.
It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I got to go to bed.
Yeah, my wife and I are doing the same kind of mellow thing tonight. And Sonny has also attested that he's a fogey, too, just like us.
I'll actually probably be chatting with Matt on iChat tonight.
Exactly.
Well, we want to thank you for being a part of our show. And it's always nice to have real community members a part of our little community here.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much. And so, folks, you've been listening to Matthew Good. And check out his weblog. Thank you, Matt.
See you guys.
Later.